The little king's backed up. Clogged from balls to brains.
You think dipping his wick will cure what ails him?
There's no cure for being a cunt.
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of SpecFic Media's Beyond the Wall, or as Chooch would put it, SpecFic Media Behind Beyond the Wall podcast.
It's wow. Hard to get that level of grit.
It is.
You have to get the gritty voice with me, but I am back this week. Thanks to everyone for doing such a great job last week. I was not killing snarks, but I was under the weather. The Silent Sisters were sitting with me, waiting for me to pass away, but it didn't happen. Made a recovery, so I am here this week with everybody this week. So say hi, everybody. Chooch, how you doing?
I'm excellent.
Awesome. And Viv?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And Nutty?
I'm good.
All right, she survived a two-hour webinar today, and she's ready to go. And last but never least in our hearts is Christiana.
Webinar is fun to say.
It is a fun word to say.
We said it many times earlier.
Webinar.
Webinar.
Yep. So we had episode 4, which was The Garden of Bones. Is that what it was called, Nutty?
Yes, it is.
And we had such an awesome opening credits because not only did we get one new place, but we got two.
Yes.
Woo! So.
I guessed we would see Carth, but I even though I think I even said last time, oh, well, they're probably going to Harrenhal next. It didn't occur to me that they would have Harrenhal in the credits. And I don't know about you guys, I kind of liked that it doesn't move.
Yes, yes. That was the main note there was, Harrenhal looks dead.
Well, I remember looking at it and I was like, wait, what was that? And I had to go back to actually see what it was because it wasn't immediately recognizable to me. And then I was, because it wasn't moving and it looked so dead.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't see Vaes Dothrak.
Well, I missed that completely on the map, the Harrenhal. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if Chooch saw Harrenhal, because I don't remember him commenting on it.
No, each time we saw the map, I was busy trying to connect cables and prepare things.
It was so a bit of a clusterfuck.
We did back up to see Carth, but
yes.
I did not notice till the third watching, because Chooch and Viv and I did a little experiment where we just got on Skype last night and watched the episode and just talked. It was more Viv and I talking, trying not to spoil things for for Chooch.
It's so hard.
Did you guys record it?
No, but I that was what I was saying this morning, is that, yeah, we
fixed
definitely
it didn't happen.
That. Yes.
Well, actually, Chooch and I recorded it.
Did you?
Yeah.
You did. Is that what took long? What was the funny thing last night is that it took Chooch about 45 minutes to actually get us ready to go after.
No, that's what? Just an exaggeration. No.
Of course I'm exaggerating.
You said but, okay. This is PG we're talking about.
Plus I said, oh, just forget it. I'm going to just watch it and then we'll talk. And then,
oh my God, you were so pissed.
Then Chooch got mad. And then I was like, let's go ahead and try.
No, Chooch just got it set up. And then I read to him, PG says, just, he's already started it. Just, we'll try next time. And Chooch just goes, fuck! And he starts pulling cables apart and he tosses his laptop with the lid closed and just has like a little tantrum. And then PG's like, oh no, I'll wait for you. Because I was like, oh, well, we just got it. Okay, well, never mind. And he goes, no, I'll wait again. And you just weren't answering. And then I go, Chooch.
It wasn't quite that dramatic, but there were changing requirements during the night.
It's me, baby. There's always going to be changing requirements. You should know this by now.
But when we finally got it going, we missed Harrenhal, but we did see, as we were getting to, it go past the Shivering Sea and under the steampunk sun, or behind the steampunk sun, and then we get Karth, which had the walls rising up, which was a lot of fun to see. And then we go to the first scene, which is on the Riverlands, and we have the two Lannister bannermen discussing who's the best fighter, starting with the Mountain or Jaime, and then we have that idea that, you know, Loras and Renly, that they're stroking ponies is really just common knowledge, because everybody's
stroking ponies.
That was our saying from episode one. We threw that out there, but
something about bronies.
Yes, but Loras. But we had the line, Loras Tyrell is prettier than the queen, and the
better with a sword than any of them.
How good could he be? He's been stabbing Renly Baratheon for years, and Renly ain't dead.
We also learn in the scene that farts, again, are always funny.
Oh, boys.
It's all fun and games until your face gets bitten off by a direwolf.
Oh, you're right, little prick.
You should see your face. I swear you pissed yourself.
Exactly. True. And if only he hadn't been scented like that, he might not have lost his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let that be a lesson to all of you.
Yes.
I was going to say, he didn't lose
fart
his ass.
On other people, fart on other people so that the dire wolf attacks them first.
Mm. Now, my question from...
It occurred to me that by saying that he heard something leading up to his fart joke, he's kind of crying wolf. Karma, right?
Astute observation.
Okay, my question from this part is, was the wolf Grey Wind that attacked? Because right after we have the light-haired Grey Wolf attacking the guy we learned his name was Rennick as he was pissing, they have this cool quick cut to another wolf that looked a lot darker, and then the focus change to Rob in the background, and then they start, you know, their march and the whole King of the North saying. So I was wondering, because in the books, weren't there more than, I mean, they sort of had wolf, they did have more than one wolf sort of, you know, with the
not with Rob. Arm.
Okay.
No.
Wait,
no.
So yeah, there's the super pack that's out there somewhere.
Yeah exactly.
But I mean, maybe I just missed it, but I didn't notice more than one wolf. I thought it was just Grey Wind that we saw.
Yeah. Well, you saw Grey Wind, you saw, you know, the jump or whatever, and then it immediately cut to another, well, what I thought was another wolf standing right in front of Rob.
But I only watched again,
you,
I
mean, know, you know, time is a fleeting thing in this
say,
show.
Time, the time compression of Westeros might have come into play there. And
well, maybe I just didn't see it either, but I thought it just did sort of a fancy swipe edit to showing just right up to close-up of Rob on his horse. And so my interpretation of the scene, and so maybe I just missed some things, I don't want to tell you you're wrong, but I thought that it was just the Grey Wind swipe to Rob on his horse, and they are listening to Grey Wind attacking just before they ride in themselves.
Okay.
That's what I thought was happening.
I was just cheering for Grey Wind because I was so happy to have that in the series. You know, how Rob attacks with his wolf, and I didn't pay that much attention. Sorry. I was too excited.
That's okay.
Every time I saw it, I was too excited.
Well, again, we have the lack of an actual battle on screen, but again, you know, money and all that stuff. So, but I do like how they segued to the after battle rather than having Tyrion knocked out and then, oh, the battle's over. We actually had, you know, a little bit of a play there. And then we move into the next scene, which is the morning after the battle. And we see some Silent Sisters. We get to meet Roose Bolton.
As a blinking, you'll miss it.
Yeah.
Right. He did get to say his family's favorite saying. Yeah.
Well, we learned soon enough. In my family, we say, a naked man has few secrets, a flayed man none.
Charming.
Right. Sexy, even.
We get to,
No.
Just thank not even God.
Oh, by the way, Chooch.
No.
We get an introduction of what might be another strong woman, as the ladies like to say.
I think she lied.
You think she lied?
I don't think she gave the right name.
Okay. Well, there is a character in the book, and I think this is one of those they're changing characters.
It's a detour.
Well,
it's a detour, and
yeah, but I think it's it's definitely this is an example of something where if you know some details about the production as opposed to spoilers, it tells us a little bit about that character.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but
so IMDb knows something.
So the fact that we're seeing the scene at all is new compared to the book, because we didn't see any of that in the book. But yeah, so it might not be as different as it first appears, I guess, is all I'm going to say.
Okay.
I was just bummed for the guy who lost his foot. He didn't even get milk of the poppy, and they wrote milk of the poppy like every other paragraph in the first book.
Well, yeah, but you were dealing with the nobleman.
That's true.
You were dealing with the king, and
and there are no maesters on the battlefield.
Yeah.
They stay where it's safe. It's hard to run in heavy chains.
So anyway, this lady's name in this anyway would be Talissa from, and she says she's from Volantis. Mm-hmm. Volantis, those that might not know, is one of the free cities east of Westeros.
Is that what she said? I always Volantis. All right. When I read that word, comes out in a very different pronunciation. I didn't even realize she was referencing the same word.
How do you pronounce it?
I always pronounce it Voltanis.
Okay.
Well, it's definitely Volantis.
So, you're right. She lied. that lying bitch.
And a little bit about Volantis and strong women. It's one of those places where women can be landholders, have the right to vote, and can even be, I think they can even be, they have triarchs as their rulers, democratically elected rulers. So, but she has some good lines. She's not really being swayed by his charm, or his attempts at charm anyway, and says, you're fighting to overthrow the king, and yet you have no plan for what comes after.
Right.
And some other things as she goes along. Was there anything else from this scene anybody wanted to bring up?
Go ahead.
I don't even know that he was necessarily trying to be charming at this point as much as he was getting a little bit wrapped up in this whole I'm a noble warrior looking for justice and all of that sort of thing.
Believing
and she kind of deflated that, and that he was sort of, I think it wasn't so much that he was trying to win her over as much as he was trying to sort of get back that sense of I'm doing the right thing here. And it left him a little bit unsettled, which of course could lead to,
Thank you.
Well, I think he fell in love with her when she was chopping off the guy's legs. So, you know.
Well, but I mean, and the other thing is, she's also the first person in the whole little company that he's fighting with that is saying, "Yeah, you suck. You're causing all this death. Look at this kid without a leg. It's your fault." You know, and I think that that's news to him, that people actually are there with him and doubt what he's doing.
You never told me where you're from.
Volantis.
Volantis? You're far from home. The boy was lucky you were here.
He was unlucky that you were.
I think that this scene is important because it shows Rob's true nature. He doesn't really care that it's not one of his men. He goes to help just the same. Mm-hmm. And Rob also said, we are not going to torture because they have our people and we don't want to give them any cause. Because he thinks if he treats other people well, people will treat him well. Whereas nobody else in this world really does that.
Yeah.
He's got that Stark honor thing going for him, and he truly believes in it. And it's a very quick scene, but I think that it shows that personality of Rob.
Well, and it's, you know, all of the Starks have had to come to grips with the fact that the world doesn't hold to the same morals and standards they do. They've all been hit in the face by that.
Did want to throw in a couple of Patman's comments as we go through, since he always has some good insights. And he said about Rob's war effort, he said he really enjoyed the Lannister comic relief prior to the attack. I almost imagine the one guy being played by Ricky Gervais. He said the introduction of Bruce Bolton was fantastic. He looks very much as I imagined him. I am glad they are not going with the Bruce Bolton signature effect, his whispery voice. Whispers work fine on the page, but I'm getting old, so I'm glad the actor spoke normally.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think that would have gotten old real quick on the TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He closes with, anyway, I felt his introduction was very succinct and worked on fleshing out his character traits, from the get-go. So if we don't have anything else about the battle scene, we move over to King's Landing, to the throne room. And my note here for Joffrey is, oh, Joffrey, the party everyone will throw when you eventually die. Not that he's going to die on the show.
Everybody dies someday.
Everybody dies someday, and there will be a party.
There's a great They Might Be Giants song on their latest album called When Will You Die? It's not about Joffrey specifically. But
it should be.
I just wanted to point out that we see Lancel here. And when I was watching it, I thought they cast a different actor because he looks so different to me. And then I looked it up, and IMDb did not list him in this episode at all. So I had to do further digging and found out it is the same actor.
Yeah.
But they darkened his hair, and they changed the hairstyle, and he looks much older. And it really threw me because I was like, wait, that's Lancel?
Being with Cersei will just age so dramatic.
And darken your hair.
They'll suck the golden right out of your life.
Well, I didn't recognize him at a first glance in this scene, but in his later scene, though, I thought it was obviously the same guy.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Me too.
So we have Sansa being threatened, degraded before those that are in the hall. We have Lancel sounding more Lannister-y. It's a little bit stronger in this scene, for his moment of glory until later, which we'll get to. A pack of wolves, you say? Feasted on the flesh of the slain? Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
Good old propaganda alive and well in Westeros.
Oh, yeah. Well, there has to be some reason that the Lannisters lost. There could be no other explanation than sorcery.
Of course.
We have Meryn being asked to unburden Sansa with her clothes. And we might as well just go through this because I'm going to play this anyway, because this is probably the longest clip I'm going to play ever on the show. But, Tyrion arrives.
What kind of knight beats a helpless girl?
The kind who serves his king, imp.
Careful now. We don't want to get blood all over your pretty white cloak.
Someone get the girl something to cover herself with.
Tyrion saying she's to be your queen. Do you have no regard for her honor? I'm punishing her. For what crime? She did not fight her brother's battles, half-wit. Mm-hmm. You cannot talk to me like that.
The king can do as he likes.
The mad king did as he liked. Has your Uncle Jaime ever told you what happened to him?
You can't threaten the king like that.
No one threatens his grace in the presence of the king's guard.
I'm not threatening the king, sir. I am educating my nephew. Bronn, the next time Sir Meryn speaks, kill him. That was a threat. See the difference?
Tyrion leads Sansa out of the hall. He asked her if, pretty much point blank, do you want this engagement to end? And she says, no, I'm, loyal and to my love, Joffrey. And, he says after she leaves, Lady Stark, you may survive us yet.
So powerful. Such a powerful scene. Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, just having Tyrion come in the way he did and just rescue her, and the Hound, as soon as he was released to help her, did so immediately without hesitation.
Yep.
It was just really cool.
He was so uncomfortable looking during it, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of uncomfortable activities in this episode.
Yeah, when that asshole goes and punches her, it's like all these people in their fancy clothes standing around watching this little girl get punched in the stomach by a fully dressed knight as he pulls out his sword.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, scumbags.
Who seems to enjoy it?
He just a little too much, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Trant is like, he's the guy that in the first episode this season just seemed to have this sadist mind link with Joffrey where it's like, yeah, give Dantos his wine. And yeah. Trant just intuitively understands that means drown him with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Scumbag. Oh.
Scumbag.
I couldn't tell, you know, when Tyrion went to help her up and everything, if he was being extra kind out of fondness for her or the Starks, or because Joffrey was being so cruel, or if it was just plain strategy.
No, I think, my belief from the book and from the way the scene played out was that it was the first two that you mentioned, as well as shame that someone of the Lannister family line would behave in such a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like, it was shame, it was horror, it was embarrassment, it was protection. I don't think at that point that he was playing a game.
Yeah, it's not just whores that Tyrion likes to protect. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. all innocents.
Innocence, abused exactly. women.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the bastard children and yep. the prostitutes. They both have gotten strong reactions out of Tyrion so far this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think he has a respect for the Stark family.
Yes.
And then also I think he's just literally horrified at what he sees. Like it's
yeah.
he came back to King's Landing knowing how much of a little shit that Joffrey is, but it's like yeah. he keeps upgrading.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just when you think you couldn't hate Joffrey anymore.
Well, and let's not forget the scene coming up. Yeah, he proves yeah. that little fact right there.
Mm-hmm. But I also think that Tyrion is truly trying to... I don't think he thinks he can reform Joffrey mm-hmm. or truly educate him, but possibly curb his behavior and try and teach him how to behave in public, at least.
Yeah.
You know, present yourself as honorable and decent.
Good girl.
You can be a crazy dick in the behind the curtain.
Right. As most kings are.
Well, yes. And the other thing
and too, presidents.
The other thing about Tyrion with Joffrey is that, you know, it's not like Robert Baratheon was a, you know, paragon of a father.
Exactly.
And so I think that Tyrion can kind of relate at least to that, and not that it makes Joffrey less of a monster, but it makes him a little bit more of a made monster rather than a born one.
Mm. And that's something that I was talking to our housemate Tina today. She'd never read the books, but they're watching it really intensely. And, you know, I was like, the thing that I don't think that you get from the book as much as what I'm getting from the show is that you can see he's a little douchebag. I mean, he's a horror of a human being, yeah. but he was born of Cersei and Robert Baratheon. So he's got that urge to just satisfy whatever urge passes through him immediately, whatever that means. And also the game strategy, where he's always looking out and always trying to ensure that everybody knows that he's the king and nobody can question his power. So it's like, you know, that's exactly what I was trying to get to with her, was that he is definitely what he has been born and bred to be by his parents and everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, we take Cersei, who is a peach of a woman herself.
Right.
And she basically has no normal human feelings of any kind except for self-preservation and love for Joffrey, pretty much.
Yeah.
Maybe some spare feelings for Jaime and the other kids too, but...
Yeah. Tom and... Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, so he's grown up with her sharing her wisdom with him.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
Well, she's been grooming him. So if that's right. if that's her, his trainer, what's he going to end up like?
Right.
I don't remember which books this was in, but at some point they do talk about Joffrey as a child and how he tortured cats and things like that.
Right.
I remember that somewhere. I don't remember where. And there is a moment where Robert discovers this behavior and he hits him, but then he never has anything to do with him again.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, what compounded the damage that Joffrey already had. That, you know, yes, he's trained by Cersei. Yes, he started out as, like, an evil little dude. But also, his father, because he doesn't know anything about Jaime being his father, but his father wants nothing to do with him and is disgusted by him. Yeah. So it's just a combination for horribleness.
Right. Yeah. And so that's not to give Joffrey like a pass.
Or no,
right.
No, yeah, no. Exactly. Not at all.
Now, see, if only Robert Baratheon had taught Joffrey to harness his desires against other serial killers, and then he could have been Dexter.
There you go.
Yeah. Two shows in one.
Now, was it on the show last season, or was it more in the books? Once he got that crossbow, speaking of his weapon of choice, that they talk about him just like killing every little animal that he can find.
You know, I think that was with in it. The books.
Yeah, I think I was in the books. So yeah, he definitely.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah, aren't like you? Like the serial killer that you know kills cats in the backyard, and you know pretty much Joffrey right there.
Yeah, in these last two episodes, he's clearly fond of it, but they don't really say why.
Yeah. It's his new favorite toy. He carries it around with him all the time. Has to use the special crank to arm it.
And the whip was a present from someone too, right?
The whip?
Yeah, in the books. Well, he hands the chick the whip later. And in the books at some point.
Yeah, it was just
no. Then he hands her a whip after
that was
his belt.
A scepter.
It was belt and a scepter.
Oh, that was a scepter. Okay, never mind. I have like some weird memory of a whip, but I don't know. I could be way off.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to just bite my tongue right now.
Yeah, I have a memory of a whip too, but I'm fighting. It was different prostitutes, I think. Speaking of prostitutes, well, we have the little discussion, the aside between Bronn and Tyrion at the end of the scene where Bronn says, the Little King's backed up, clogged from balls to brains. Tyrion says, you think dipping his wick will cure what ails him? And he says, there's no cure for being a cunt. So,
He's not wrong.
But Tyrion takes Bronn's advice.
The part where it's just, yeah, it couldn't hurt.
Yeah, it couldn't hurt, yes. So we cut over to Joffrey's chambers. We get another scene with Roz, and things are just not going well for Roz this season.
Which one was Roz? Was Roz the hitting one or the one getting hit?
She was the hitting
one.
Okay. Do you have like a TV with bad reception or something?
No, you know what it is, honestly? all the naked ladies are looking the same to me. I don't know.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, I was wondering if the one on the bed getting hit, she looked like the same one.
She was the same one, yes.
Pycelle
with Pycelle. Yeah, there's only three prostitutes in King's Landing. It's you know the one with mayonnaise on her face and
well,
Roz.
Well, I'm glad that wasn't
and
mayonnaise.
This one. No,
because I really like mayonnaise.
So anyway, we have
So that's what we'll refer to her from now on as mayonnaise.
Yes, mayonnaise.
We have Roz and the girl from Pycelle's room in Joffrey's chambers.
Which
first of all, I have to say, what was Roz thinking? Because that wasn't spanking in any way, shape, or form. That was tapping her bottom very nicely, not spanking. So no wonder Joffrey. I was actually on Joffrey's side at first when he was like, "No, spank her harder."
That was porno spanking. Wow.
That was very revealing.
Those cheeks aren't red.
And then Roz says the all too telling line, too much pain will spoil the pleasure. Not for Joffrey, obviously. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I have a couple of thoughts, I think. One was just that I almost got the sense with Joffrey that even though there was the sadism aspect to it, that it was almost not even as much about that for him as about like, oh, my uncle sent you.
That was him playing the game.
Yeah. And so it was like he's a sadist, absolutely, because no one else would do that to somebody.
Right.
But at the same time, it seemed to me like it was actually even less about that than about just showing Tyrion that it's like, oh, you think you can buy me off with some whores?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing was that, you know, obviously we didn't have this scene in the books because we didn't have, you know, Joffrey as a POV character. But I feel like I remember what would have been Tyrion's scene afterwards, like when he's finding out about it.
Yes, that's how I remember it.
Okay, see, because I was going to say, because I was reading a bunch of blog posts, people talking about the episode, and everyone seems to be talking about, oh, this made-up scene, that we didn't need it, and that's one thing. But, I mean...
That's how I remember it.
But, yeah, it seemed like everyone was talking about it like it being a complete invention, and I was thinking, I don't think so. They just showed it instead of only seeing Tyrion's... finding out afterwards.
That's how I remember it, is that it's like it's something that's mentioned to Tyrion, and that's like all the play that it really gets in there. I mean, he's pissed, all that, but it was not from Joffrey's point of view. And that was something that I wanted to ask you guys, because again, I've not gone back and reread, but did we ever get Joffrey's POV in book two?
No. I don't think so. No.
All right.
Never.
Okay.
I remember Tyrion talking about wanting to get Joffrey and send her to the brothel, but the very special lady that he would go to and get him set up. He didn't just want to send him to a woman who loses virginity. He wanted to send him to the very best woman in all of King's Landing. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember if it actually ever happened. So I haven't finished my reread of book two yet, so I'll let you know if I reread that.
Yeah.
But if you guys remember, it probably happened.
Well, I'm glad that you, Viv, remembered the similar scene that I do, because I wasn't sure if I was imagining things.
PG?
I remember in passing something about, it was like you were saying, Tyrion finding out about something, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it wasn't
detail.
Anything big at all.
Close at all.
Yeah.
But I think the last, because we've been talking a while about these first few scenes.
I thought the other end of that scepter that was going to get used, but.
Yeah, when he first picked it up, I'm like, what is
this? I know.
What can do with this thing?
I was very scared for her. Either way, it was bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, one thing, even another level of this, was when Roz started touching Joffrey, it seemed like he definitely was more scared than, he didn't want to be touched by by a woman. And then he sort of was like, okay, well, I can, once he pushed them together, that's when his sadism came out.
Well, to me, there's two things. For one, it's like, I don't think he was scared as much as he was disgusted that a common whore would be sent to him. Especially one that his uncle picked out for him. And the other thing is that there's no way that kid didn't see his father whoring around with prostitutes, and that he may, in his mind, be repulsed by that.
Well, remember how he what he said to Cersei about that.
Yeah.
The idea that, he had all these bastards when he was tired of you.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know.
So, plus, he's such a sadist sociopath, it's not at all unreasonable to believe that he may not have sort of a normal male sexual response at all.
Sexuality, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he looked really startled and kind of, no.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out how to get the upper hand.
When he first hears from the Hound, your uncle has sent you a name to present, I mean, his first thought has got to be, oh, he's going to try to kill me or something. And so then when he goes in there and it's just horrors, and he's like, oh.
Yeah.
So we move from King's Landing to Renly's camp and to his tent. And we have a conversation between Lord Baelish and Renly. We have a quick nod to Brienne, who already has Renly's trust. As Renly says, her trust comes without a charge. Basically what comes out of that is... Baelish saying, when you reach King's Landing, you may face a protracted siege or open gates. If his primary goal was to get there to see Catelyn, at least he is
gotta get into networking.
Serving, yes.
Yeah.
he was using his LinkedIn status to get a possible job in the future.
Hey, I was just elected mayor of the Stormlands.
You get a free latte.
And then his talk with Marjorie I thought was excellent as well, because I'm really enjoying what they're doing with her character, because she just shows him that she can play the game as well as he can.
Oh, yeah. I love the whole bit of, you know, he says, sadly, I've not been lucky with love or whatever he said. Yeah. And she's saying, oh, that is sad. Or maybe not, since the concept of marriage seems to confuse you.
That was a great line. I love that line. Yeah.
My question about Marjorie is that why is she wearing a dog neck shield cone? Is she afraid?
You were calling
somebody
it
afraid that she's gonna scratch at her neck with her, hands or something?
She's wearing an animal's cone of shame.
Oh, well, she just got fixed.
That was a crazy. Yes, Patrick, you did point that out last night. He was like, "What is up with that?"
And then we have Baelish saying exactly what everybody else is saying. Loras enters Renly tent, and you have your own tent. So, you know, again, beating us over the head with the idea that everybody knows about Loras and Renly.
Another just good exchange from that whole bit was, you're showing a lot of interest in my marriage. And he just says, your marriage is interesting.
Yes, to me and the realm.
Well, my favorite line is the next one because he says, the marriage of a wealthy girl always breeds interest, if nothing else. Of course, using breeds because, you know, well, if Renly's gay, how are you going to be breeding?
You seem quite interested in our marriage.
Your marriage is quite interesting. Not only to me, but to the realm. The marriage of a wealthy girl always breeds interest, if nothing else.
Plus interest, like money.
Yep. Oh, man, that was so many levels.
Yeah, wow. It's like we're in Inception.
Well, I just think it was a good demonstration of not only her intelligence, but how savvy she is in the game.
Yeah, and I think he appreciated that, too. Like, when she finally walked off, that reaction shot from him is like, ah, this girl's formidable.
Yeah, it was like a rut-row moment.
Kitten's got claws.
Well, I didn't even think it was like, you know, ruh-roh. It's more like just like, oh, huh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, like not even like worried or scared, but just like, oh, okay. Yeah. So you're another player here, I see.
So from there, we move over to the Red Wastes, and we have a Blood Rider returning from Karth. Then Danny finds out that the Elders of Karth will welcome the Mother of Dragons. Jorah says, you know, has this little description of the Garden of Bones, and that was our quick aside to Danny, and they're finally going to get out of the desert, but we go back over to Harrenhal first. We have them approaching Harrenhal. We have, you know, first of all, Harrenhal looks cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I agree it looks cool, although it looks like way more destroyed than I ever imagined it in the books.
Yes.
I imagined it in the books as being damaged, but otherwise mostly a functioning castle rather than just like 90% ruin.
Frickin' dragons. Mm-hmm. What do you expect?
Plus, I think they've kept them outside and stuff so far. Well, I'm sure. We'll move but inside the castle next time, but it did look a lot more. Even
still, the way Wary Harrenhal looks, I'm thinking, like, I don't know if Littlefinger would have been so happy to get it if he had seen a place.
Yeah, that was one of my thoughts.
We have Arya saying, or I guess Pot Pie saying, what's that smell? And Arya saying, dead people. We have the little scene later where, you know, pretty much makes it apparent that everybody dies when they get to Harrenhal.
Yeah.
And then we have our first telling of the prayer, or saying of the prayer as she's trying to go to sleep.
Wait. I want to ask Chooch if he realizes the importance of the names that she was listing. Chooch, are you there?
Well, people she wants to see dead.
Okay.
And
I mean, obviously we, you know, those of us who had read the books knew when we heard Yoren's story last time that they were sort of adding an extra layer to something that she did in the books, which was to say the names. But now in the story, it's like she got the idea from Yoren, which makes it more meaningful, I think.
Yeah, I think too. For sure.
I did like, if nobody had anything else about this particular scene of Harrenhal, I did like the cut from Arya's prayer over to Catelyn, her mom. Mm-hmm. Even hear her last couple names that she's reciting, you know, with Catelyn on the screen. We have Baelish come in, and, you know, Baelish just can't catch a break, you know.
Oh, man.
Dude, no, he's trying to make a play for her, and he brought her husband's bones. I mean, come on.
His dead body is literally between them on the floor.
I was like,
they're standing over his corpse.
Okay, you really think you got to give it up to the man. He's got balls.
Do I? Yes. Do I really?
All I could think was, does he really think this is the best timing?
I've loved you since I was a boy. It seems to me that fate has given us this chance to...
You lost your mind. Get out!
See, I know.
The thing with Littlefinger, too, though, is that he, as smart and savvy and political as he is in most areas, with Kat, it really gets him all messed up. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't know what he's doing with her. Yeah. Because he feels like he's able to read and tell everybody else what they want, and then somehow that just never works with her, and it always leaves him just like off balance and saying the wrong thing.
Yep.
And he doesn't get that he's been in the friend zone so far that he's never coming out of it. And he keeps trying, but it's just not happening, dude.
Well, betraying her husband, you know, really doesn't help.
That doesn't help at all.
And that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, at his heart, he's not a good person.
No.
I mean, so that's the thing, is that, you know, to say that he loves her isn't even really true in the traditional sense. He's more like he's obsessed with her.
Right. Yes. He never got her.
He had sort of a teenage boyish infatuation that got basically horribly stomped on in a way that was pretty traumatic for him. And now he's powerful and he's thinking, now I can maybe get her. And then she still's refusing him, and that kind of pisses him off. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't know what to do about it.
And I mean, look at the amount of time that's passed by. I mean, she has given birth to the King of the North in that amount of time. You know, it's like, he hasn't, at least for the episode where there were the prostitutes were with him, he implied at least, or if he didn't outright say that he wasn't with anybody else because he couldn't be with the one he loved.
Well, and even in that scene from season one, like they say, was she very beautiful? And he's like, no, not really. Good breeding, though. And, you know, you can just see that, like, he doesn't love people in the way that normal people love people. I mean, he's not sadistic in the way that Joffrey is, but, you know, he's almost just as broken, really.
Yeah,
I mean he's really trying. I mean he lies about betraying Ned. He lies about Arya being there in King's Landing, and then you know brings in the bones like he's giving her a present. Yeah. I mean, he says I have a present for you. I mean,
that was so painful.
I mean you get to see Catelyn's heart break twice in the same scene. First you know when he starts talking about her daughters, but then you know when he brings in the bones and she's looking at the bones, of course you see her, you know, her heart just breaking right in front of you. So
yeah, but she held strong till he left the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, badass like that.
You know what I think part of his deal is, and this is both when he was trying to deal with her and when he was trying to deal with Ned, he's just so cynical and manipulative all the time that he can't help but just assume that everyone else is the same way, really.
Yes.
And so when you get people who are not motivated by those same things, he just doesn't even know what to do with himself. Yeah. And that's why he had so much trouble dealing with Ned, too.
Mm-hmm. And that's why he deals so well with Cersei and Varys and everybody else in King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's also... Go ahead.
Just an off question. Was he supposed to bring Ned's bones, or is that going to screw something else up?
If you, you know, recall...
Rob demanded them... But I figured...
There was a scene in an earlier episode, I think episode two of this season, where that was some of Rob's terms.
Right.
Yeah. And Tyrion made kind of an offhand comment of, oh, might as well send Ned's bones back, you know, as a show
gesture
of, faith.
Of good faith, yes.
Yeah, and so he did say that, and there wasn't a direct connection made to Littlefinger here, but it makes sense that they would connect those dots.
Yeah, that's what I meant, is that if they were supposed to, you know, show up at Rob's feet, or is he not going to know they got him? But we've got the Twitter network, so they'll be okay.
Yeah, they'll be good. One thing that I wanted to say about Littlefinger is that, and much like with Joffrey, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff in the books that we're probably never going to get to. I mean, we haven't, I don't even think they cast Catelyn's father, so I really doubt they're ever going to bring up, you know, certain areas of this. I'm trying to not go into too much detail in case they might, but basically there is something in Littlefinger's past that made him think he had a shot, but he didn't, because it was actually Lysa, not Catelyn. So, you know, I mean, he doesn't understand that she's never felt anything for him.
Yeah.
Because of this one thing in his past. And the other thing I wanted to mention is I loved when Kat took a sword to a knife to him.
Yeah.
I wanted her to cut him.
Well, especially after he held a knife to Ned's
from navel to neck.
Well, and, you know, you could see on his face, too, that when she did that, he just, he had this moment of, wow, I really misread this.
My bad. Wow. Forget I said anything.
So from Catelyn's tent, we move back over to Harrenhal. We get introduced to the new Mountain, Gregor Clegane, since they have a new actor playing him now.
Oh, do they? He's in armor, so I can't tell.
Well, I mean, the guy that cut the head off the horse last season was much bigger.
He's like bulkier.
Yeah. This guy's tall, looked like, but this not guy, so broad. Yeah, he looks pretty lanky. And
yeah, I thought he looked rather svelte.
He talks like Christopher Lee, though. Did you hear his voice later?
Yes, yes he did. We have Pot Pie peeing when he...
Pot pie.
I'm calling him Pot Pie. So
it's Pot Pie.
Because that's better.
Rename all the characters.
Hey, they're doing it. Why can't we do it?
Yeah, really. Asha, Yara, Hot Pie, Pot.
You're Asha. I loved Christiana. Your note when you sent in your notes when you weren't there and you called her Yarasha. So I called her Yarasha like 3 or 4 times on that episode.
Alas, I can't take full credit for that. I read that.
Oh darn! I loved it. So yes, we have Pot Pie peeing when he thinks he has a great strategy for not getting chosen, and that it worked out. And then we meet the Tickler, the man who tortures the man with the rat in the bucket. The man talking, not the man holding the torch. And then we have...
I think it's interesting that that's how the show decides to introduce us to the idea of the Brotherhood, and that the Brotherhood are a thing that's out there somewhere, is that they're asking questions. Where's the Brotherhood? Who helped the Brotherhood? You know, and so, but you know, up to now in the show, we have no idea who they are.
Yeah, right, and there's no.
What did you think of that?
I'm sure Chooch had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, I had a couple moments in this episode of just thinking I must have forgotten something. There's another moment a little later on, which I'm sure it is just that I forgot. And yeah, so this one I was just like, what? Well, what's the Brotherhood? And then when they do what's his face, the Smith, and he says, I don't even know what that is, then I'm like, oh yeah, okay, so I'm not supposed to know what that is.
Yeah.
In the books, when they came and to where they were sleeping and where Yorin dies, they were not looking for Gendry, they were looking for the Brotherhood. So it's a little bit of a
Yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of compression with Arya's story. So, like you know, the torture stuff with the Tickler and all that didn't even happen at Harrenhal.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff that's changing with Arya's story. I'm a little surprised to see, I mean, I'm skipping ahead a bit, I guess, but to see Tywin show up, just because that it seems to be skipping ahead even more than I would have thought that they were gonna.
Right.
Yeah.
But but the other aspect of that, though, is just that I think the episode has provided us with the one and only time that anyone will ever say, oh, good, Tywin Lannister is here.
I know! He comes riding in.
Wait, I what did I write down exactly? Where is it? Saved by Tywin? Really?
we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Yeah, so sorry.
That's okay. But then the scene, we have Polliver and the Mountain getting added to Arya's prayer.
Yep.
Polliver being the jerk that took Needle and, you know, beats helpless women and just wants a crust of bread. Mm-hmm. We move over to the meeting between Renly and Stannis. Pretty much, you know, a lot of that was pulled straight from the book. Yep.
Renly was slamming the one-liners, though.
He's the Lord's chosen. Born amidst salt and smoke.
Born amidst salt and smoke? Is he a ham?
He did.
Born of salt and smoke. Is he a ham?
Is he a ham?
That was great.
And we have Renly saying, oh, you must be this fire priestess we hear so much about. Brother, now I understand why you found religion in your old age. So,
I just want to ask Chooch, what do you think of this whole born in smoke and salt and everything else and this whole the Lord has picked him thing?
I really don't know what to make of it. I mean, like the one episode when they were on the beach burning the idols and stuff, you know, saying it was clearly that, you know, he was half-assing it and just saying the words to get through. So, yeah, I'm not, you know, and she's got the fancy magic necklace thing, so I'm still not quite sure what to make of it. This was the other scene that I was, you know, having memory problems, because it made me think, you know, when Stannis saying, you know, that he's the king, I couldn't remember why Renly thinks he has a claim to the throne, if it was just Loras urging him on, or...
It was, basically. That's the thing with Renly, is that he knows that there's not any sort of right of succession about it, as much as it's just a matter of he thinks Stannis would be a crappy king, I would be a better king, and
he's more
who cares about the right of succession at this point anymore anyway.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm more popular, people like me.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah, he's definitely the more beloved of the two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So
plus
that's
he's
really
got Highgarden behind him. So
and he has Loras shaving him and talking him into doing it. So
well, and Marjorie Tyrell is on his side too.
Oh, yeah.
I think the most interesting line from that scene though was Renly saying, when he was saying that all the people that decry the Stannis claim, he says unborn children deny it in their mother's wombs.
Yeah.
That was
like
a good line.
I didn't notice it the first time, but when I watched it the second time, I was like, interesting.
And, you know, for all of his flip comments, I thought the couple of moments like that line and then right at the end when he's like, I loved him once.
Yeah.
When Renly occasionally gets a little more serious, you know, I think it shows all the layers of his character. Mm-hmm. Because... Yeah. He's got so much going on with him. He's a really complex character. I mean, because he's got the whole front that he does, the funny, charming, you know, guy who wants to put on a show and dresses flamboyantly. And but then he's also got like the really insecure part where, you know, he hides it pretty well, but it's like, you know, Loras was egging him on in last season, and you can see how hesitant he was, you know, approaching Marjorie, even though he should know how freaking important it is. And so he's just got all of these layers. And then there's also just this part of like when he's finally meets with Stannis, and you can just see that he had somehow like built up in his head that somehow he was just going to talk Stannis out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was going to convince him the way he probably convinces everybody, because he's so personable.
It's like, well, surely Stannis wouldn't just insist on fighting me.
Right?
I mean, that just makes no sense. Why would he do that? I have more numbers. He's got to see that people like me better. Why would he insist like this?
Yeah, you know, exactly. Do we bring in the fact that Renly's the youngest, so of course he's used to getting his way?
Yeah.
And then we have Catelyn saying, you know, listen to yourselves. If you were sons of mine, I'd knock your heads together and lock you in a bedchamber until you remembered you were brothers. So she, yep.
Classic.
You know, she's just like, why are you two gonna, you know, kill each other off with and your men when we all have a common enemy?
Mm-hmm. And they're both so prideful that they can't compromise.
Yeah.
Well, and that line, by the way, is my favorite from the scene in the book too. So.
Oh, and Stannis came out and said it. Your husband endorsed me. I can't believe you're standing with him.
Yep.
He does have a point.
I think that she should have been hitting the common enemy piece harder, though, from the beginning. Because I think, remember your brothers, obviously was getting no traction with either of them. So the whole thing of, like, if you guys want to fight, then okay, but let's go kill the Lannisters first. Then you guys can fight and we'll go back to the North.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I know we moved away from the what is he a ham thing. it's sticking with me. But all I can think is when I heard that line that how he was born of smoke and salt, I was like, really? When? When was it smoky around Stannis' birth? And well, then I tried to think about who it would have been smoky around their birth.
Right. He was reborn, though, in
on the beach.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The salt of the water and the smoke of the seven
idols burning.
Idols burning. That's the way I took it, anyway.
Yeah, that's when he got his quote lightbringer.
You know what? That makes sense because I wasn't thinking of that, but yeah, because he was reborn on the beach. All right, because I was like, he wasn't. He wasn't. There was no smoke. Thinking about his actual birth,
we weren't told about this. I was trying to think of
who was born around fire, and yeah, okay.
Okay, so where were you going with that, though, to the whole Targaryen thing?
I was just going with who the prophecy could be about.
Mm.
If not Stannis, then who?
Right. I mean, the way I always take it is that Melisandre is. You know, she got her visions or whatever of Renly being the chosen. It doesn't matter if Stannis being the chosen. Yep. Doesn't matter if Stannis believes in it or not, because she got her word. So,
well, yeah, and she's fine with just going to him and saying, "Listen, I'm going to support you because this is what I think is going to happen. You'll come around eventually.
Yep.
And in the meantime, I can offer you things."
And Melisandre pretty much ends the scene with her talking about Renly's sins as well. Look to your sins, Lord Renly. The night is dark and full of terrors. I guess that should be her. The winter is coming.
Well, I was just going to say that. That's this season's. The winter is coming. Winter is coming. Is night is dark and full of terrors. And let me just say, you know, I mean, obviously, this is from the book. But that's a creepy freaking thing to say.
It is.
It's dark and full of terrors.
I know. Just, I don't want to hear that at bedtime.
The night is dark and full of terrors.
No.
Now, good night, sweetie. Ooh.
Something old man would say.
That is something old man would say.
Yeah.
Yes. She may have said it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we move from the meeting between Renly and Stannis over to Karth. We have the 13 receiving Dany.
Wow, and Sigler got a cameo there as one of the 13. Did you see that?
I did not see that. I did see that we got to meet Baron Vladimir Harkonnen coming out to speak.
However, the Duke will die before these eyes, and he'll know that it is I, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, who encompasses his doom.
Yeah, I kept expecting him to take off in his gravity boots, and as Chooch said last night.
He's a merchant of spice.
Of spice. Oh, yes. I'm just happy because
Sting
right
was
now
ready to jump out from the side.
Yes, I'm just happy because right now I get to drop in a clip from Dune, so I'm happy.
I have to say that. You know, I'm usually a supporter of when the show changes things up from the books, but I feel like this change just really doesn't make any sense.
Talk to me, because I don't remember what changed.
Well, so in the book, what happened is that before she sent out the riders, they had actually found, like, that ruined dead city.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hanging out there for a while and sent out the fighters. But then, actually, three of the, I don't remember if it was actually three of the 13 or just emissaries or whatever, came to her at that dead city and basically said, we're going to make binding agreements with you. And then when she got to Karth, they just let her right in. Agreements with them already. And so this, I don't know, maybe was supposed to just, first of all, not have them have to build a dead city set, but also maybe just to try to play up how desperate she is. Yeah. But the whole thing just didn't read right to me at all, because I'm thinking, on the one hand, their whole thing is like, oh, we don't want to let Dothraki savages in there. They might like tear up the place. And I'm thinking, yeah, these 12 death people are going to really cause a lot of damage.
Yeah. Well, they gave her Blood Rider a new horse.
And not only that, but the actual whole 13 is just going to come right outside their front gates.
Protected. Essentially unprotected.
Yeah, you know, they have the soldiers there, and the whole thing just felt weird to me. Now, the only thing that kind of saved it is maybe realizing, okay, Spice Guy and then Zaro are playing good cop, bad cop on her.
But
that's
don't
the only
you,
way the scene made any
Christiana, you are forgetting the Game of Thrones numerology changes, because they had 20 soldiers out there. In Game of Thrones, that's really 2,000. So the 13 were protected.
Very well. Season 2, I think the ratio has changed, because Season 2 has definitely got more money.
Yeah.
So I think there's a ratio for Season 1 and then another formula for later, though.
Well, I love, because I think it was like, well, I can't show you my dragons yet because we're out of budget for this episode.
Right.
Yeah, I was really confused why she was resistant. I'm thinking, is it because they're so small? But she states in her little speech, once my dragons are fully grown. I didn't understand why she didn't just say, okay, here, take a peek, let us in.
If 13 people walked up to you and said, let me hold your baby, we want to see your baby, hand us your baby. Excuse me, you're going to have to take my baby from my cold, dead hands.
Right.
Well, but then there's also, they could just say, okay, we'll come back out in another day or so and see if you've changed your mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, she didn't know what, if she brought the dragons out, were they going to have archers shoot them? You know?
Well, what's going to happen when she walks inside this walled city with probably more soldiers and they could just steal them?
I think it was also part of her asserting her dominance. It was definitely an alpha, you're not going to get your way on this. I'm not going to cave to you, because then if I get inside, you're just going to, you know, walk all over us, whatever. I don't know. But,
well, see, I can see that, but that's just another example of why I think the scene, the way it works now, doesn't work for me, because she didn't actually come across as any kind of a threat to me. It seemed like... It made her want to be strong and yet still utterly helpless and dependent on someone deciding to help her.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, my problem with all of these scenes when it comes to this is that, you know, they could just kill them and take the dragons at any time. I know. And it's like, okay, you can bluster about this and not bring them out, and, you know, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, they could bring out all their soldiers and kill them, or, you know, any of the Dothraki hordes that were out on the waste. They made it sound like, oh, well, we sent a dead horse, but we didn't come to get the dragons ourselves or come kill you ourselves. We just sent this horse, you know, with a dead head in it. So some of that just never really came across. You know, the choices they made just didn't feel right. Like you were talking about, Christiana, you know, changing things up to make her feel helpless and that sort of thing. But,
well, and in fairness to the show's producers, I mean, Dany's story is not the most interesting part of Clash of Kings.
Right.
So, I mean, certainly the most interesting part of her story in the book has not happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
So right now they're just trying to spin out the part where it's like, and then she walked around in the desert for 6 chapters.
I just like how she laughed at them being called a horde.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I like the, what did they say? Spoken like a true Targaryen.
Yeah.
And then we get to meet Zaro Zoan Doxos.
The girl threatens to burn our city to the ground, and you would invite her in for a cup of wine?
She is the mother of dragons. Do you expect her to watch her people starve without breathing fire?
And then he invokes the cutting of the hand, which, yes, you know, when he pulled that little sword through his hand, I thought that would be a lot more blood than what they showed, but hey.
You know, I have to say, the cutting of the hand to show how serious you are about something is one of my favorite fantasy cliches.
It's a good one.
It always works.
Yeah.
Given how prevalent it is.
I'm very serious, and that's why I'm cutting my own hand.
My favorite line was the, "We can let a few Dothraki in without dooming our city."
Mm-hmm.
It's like, really? These do look pretty
awesome. I don't know. Yeah, they're pretty tough.
Yeah.
So finally, the Dothraki are safe, and we move over back over to Harren.
Well, before we finish, just want to say that said, once they got the gates open, Karth actually looks pretty nice.
Oh,
I know. Yes. I would love to vacation there.
Yeah,
nice matte painting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They arrived at the Riviera, and so we go over to Harren Hall. And we have Gendry being chosen for torture. I was really disappointed that they chose to torture him the same way. I mean, where's the creativity? I mean, you know, this guy's supposed to be such a great torturer.
Well, don't mess with what works, right?
Except that they keep having to kill people because they're not getting any information. So is it working?
Well, that's the thing is that they're not really trying to get information. If they get any information, that's like a bonus.
Yeah.
But then, as Christiana said, Tywin saves the day, makes the mountain and Polliver look stupid.
Well, they didn't really need a lot of help.
Yeah. And we have Gendry quickly giving up that he's a smith. So glad that previous storyline was so quickly forgotten, that he was trying to hide the fact that he was a smith.
Yeah.
And then,
because they already killed Gendry, right?
Yeah.
The blonde kid was Gendry. We're fine.
We're fine. The twig kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was nice that we finally had someone who knows a girl when he sees one. Tywin recognized.
I know. He called it right out.
Yeah.
I know. He's just
better than.
Like,
go ahead.
You guys are morons. You know, it's just like.
Clearly, you should not be running things.
It came across a lot better than how everyone discovered it in the books, because they wouldn't make time to stop and she couldn't go make water in the woods. And so how she was found out is on the side of the road, she just dropped pants and went to the bathroom.
Yeah,
and
at some point
Hot Pie's like, what? But in the show, this came across so much better, I think. And I think it's an interesting turn that she'll be Tywin's cup bearer.
Dressed as a boy. Why?
Safer to travel, my lord.
Smart. More than I can say for this lot. Get these prisoners to work. Bring the girl. I need a new cupbearer, my lord.
That's wheelings and dealings. No wheeze.
Well, I'm definitely interested to see how they're going to do this, because some parts of what they're surely still going to do with her storyline, mm-hmm, I feel like I'm not sure how that happens if Tywin's there already. So yeah. We'll have to see, I guess. But, but clearly just Tywin showing up at this point means that they're going to have to change her storyline even more substantially than just compressing it.
Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to it, because I think we're going to see a lot more behind the scenes stuff that we didn't see in the books. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really looking forward to this, and I like this change.
I agree. I'm interested to see how it's going to go. And plus, just, you know, nice reaction shot from little Maisie there as Arya when Tywin just says, "Oh yeah, she'll be my new cupbearer," and then walks out a shot, and then there's just this pause of her going, "What just happened?"
Go.
Yeah. Plus, we had to have more Tywin screen time, because, you know, named actor, we have to give him some screen time. So having him there is important.
Well, and it's a reminder of how he is so integral in everything going on too. He's got his fingers in everything with the war.
Awesome.
Yeah, we needed a reminder that he's out there doing stuff. He's not just still sitting in the same tent that Tyrion left. Yeah.
Field dressing another stag.
Watching his men getting their ass kicked. Mm. But so from there, if nobody has anything else, we move over to Tyrion's chambers. We have Lancel, who was he was strong for at least one scene because he goes back to his previous ways, and Tyrion tricks him into spilling all. My favorite thing was him calling it the hour of the wolf. I don't know why I like that line.
Ah, lavender oil. She always loved lavender oil, even as a girl.
I am a knight.
An anointed knight, yes. Tell me, did Cersei have you knighted before or after she took you into her bed?
I just loved when Tyrion finally pulls out, you know, the big gun of saying, I wonder what King Joffrey would say. Uh-huh. And he can just instantly, like, all the blood drains out of Lancel's face and he looks like he's about to throw up. Mm-hmm. He's just like, oh, my God.
It was so good. I love this scene in the book and I love this scene here. I just love how Tyrion puts people in their place and gets them working for him and figures things out. And this, to me, was just priceless. This is how you know Tyrion is really Tywin's son, you know, because he really does think like Tywin. I just loved it. And it also shows, I think the Lancel's fear of Joffrey is more believable and understood here because we just saw him being involved in beating up Sansa and everything. He knows how crazy he is, right? Whereas in the book, it's, yeah, okay, the king might find out, but really, we don't see Lancel and Joff interact, so we don't know that Lancel knows just how twisted Joffrey is. So.
From Pat's notes, he says, speaking of showdowns, it was great seeing Tyrion get the upper hand on Lancel. Lancel looks much better without the page boy haircut from season one.
Yep.
I was missing Lancel this season. I'm glad he hasn't been written away. So.
Yeah, well, we kind of need Lancel around for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also just, it's, again, another perfect example of how there are people who try to play in this game who are just really not up to it. And Lancel, I think, is a good example of that, of someone who got a little ahead of himself.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, thinking, yeah. Oh, I'm close with the queen, therefore I can order the hand around. Mm. No.
Yeah.
Well, and everybody does that. They think they can push Tyrion around because he's a dwarf. He called him an imp. Remember, I was talking about this last week. People think that they can put him down because everybody does when they talk about him. But when they actually interact with him, they find out, no, you can't. And I can't wait for Tyrion to put Joffrey in his place.
Speaking of finger bones, over in the Stannis' ship, we have we finally get the discussion of Davos's bagged digits. I love the line, for less fingernails to clean, and it's for fewer. Not
yes,
less. That is just such a perfect sum up of Stannis' thing. Is like, even when it is so not the point, he just can't help himself. Yep. Things have to be right, or else what is any of this for?
Exactly.
And my favorite part of the scene is when he tells Davos, when he says, if your red woman told my son to leap from the crow's nest, and Stannis stops him and says, she has a name, but then Stannis proceeds to not use her name when he says, oh, I've got something for you to smuggle.
Mm-hmm. The other nice subtle bit from that scene that I thought was great is where, he goes from, this idea of you are a hero and a smuggler, and the good act does not erase the bad. But then, and that's obviously referring to Davos, but then he also says, and the bad does not erase the good. And he kind of stares off into space, and we're thinking, gosh, Stannis, are you talking about doing something bad that you're hoping will not erase your good?
Exactly.
Do you think this will justify it? Like, that's the thing. He's telling himself, I'm a good man, so I can do some bad things and it'll be okay. And it's like, you know what? You're using the same logic everyone does when they're being bad. I have my reasons, so it's okay.
Yep. Well, and then the other thing, too, is how quickly, when we see Melisandre later, she basically contradicts that whole idea. You know, an onion that is half rotten is a rotten onion.
Yep. You're either good or you're bad. There's no in between.
And, of course, she chooses an onion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which is great.
And, you know, Stannis says at the end of that scene, he's like, we'll never speak of this again. So, obviously, he, you know, he's conflicted, but, yeah, he's got to do what he's got to do, he says.
Chooch, what'd you think of that scene?
Well, you guys got a lot more out of it.
that doesn't surprise me. We knew what to look for.
I thought it was a good conversation and, you know, spoke
Did you understand
to his
the fingers?
Character a bit. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got the finger part.
Because I know you said that it wasn't clear before. In previous
seasons. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I definitely knew what was going on. And when Melisandre and Davos, when she, you know, calls him the Onionite or whatever, Viv squeed, and I was like, okay.
Well, so the Onionite bit, just
Make
because
note of this.
At this point, they will, I doubt they'll spend any more time on that, really. It's just, they call him the Onionite because at one point when Dragonstone was under siege and everybody was starving, he was a smuggler previously, you know, an outlaw, but he smuggled food into the city, which basically saved everybody. And so Stannis decided to reward him for saving the city by, you know, raising him up and making him like his guy. Yeah. But also, I'm going to take your fingers because you're a smuggler.
Right. Yeah.
But all the other nobles in as a way of putting him down calls him the Onion Knight. And, like, that's a bad name for him. But he, of course,
like,
pride
that's
in it.
How you got your knighthood is by smuggling onions.
Yeah. But he takes pride in it. He's because he's like, yeah, I worked for this. I earned it.
Exactly. Yeah. As opposed to the other ones that were just born into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the onion part, not the, I mean, the knight part, not the onion part.
It's like, he must like onions.
He's always breaking one down.
All right, so.
So we move on.
The scene I've been waiting for since the beginning of the season.
Before anyone else says anything, I think we need Chooch's read on this last scene first.
We totally do.
Holy fuck. What the hell was that? I thought she was just going to, like, you know, wanted to get down.
Bang the Onion Knight.
But then you see the belly, and it was like, that was fast. And Vivid mentioned that she was watching really closely with Renly and Stannis and that she did not look pregnant sitting on her horse.
Yeah. When we did our second watch today.
Yeah. I really liked the line, you know, how, you know, I don't remember what it was. How you're working in shadows, you know, you proclaim the God of light works in shadows. And
yeah, but you know. She says shadows are servants of the light.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a great line.
Brighter light, the darker the shadow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then poof, one explodes out
and
of
then
her.
Yeah, and the effects and everything were just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I always thought that the shadows being a servant of the light was one of the most interesting complexities of that whole plot thread of the series of just the Lord of Light and that whole religion, you know, having all these words about being like the Savior and the Messiah and, you know, the Lord of Light and all of this stuff, and yet seeming so creepy at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, I thought it was interesting just this scene because I suspect that we saw this scene because in the book, this scene actually happens later.
Yes.
And so this, I think they're moving it up, which is going to make something that happens soon more obvious. Whereas in the book, when it happens, we're just like, what the...
That
just
was
happened.
So yeah.
And so, and we don't understand it until later, whereas now I think we will know what happened.
So the whole point of view time shifting in the book?
Well, no, it's not that it's time shifting. It's just that there's more than.
I think they're compressing two scenes.
Oh, okay.
They're compressing two scenes into one.
Gotcha.
Yes, essentially that's right. So basically, though, it is making clear like what she did. We had no idea that that was happening this early.
Yeah.
I mean, so, in the book, there was before Stannis and Renly meet. Stannis needs to take a castle, and so. Something this parts of this particular scene I believe happened when they were trying to take that castle. So you get the first look at what you know the magic, how magic really works with her. She doesn't need no stone around her neck because she can birth the shadow baby.
And I was paying close attention to the stone, and I couldn't tell if it was glowing or if it was just the lantern light, and it was. Really hard.
I think it like was glowing at one point.
Yeah, it seemed like it. But then it looked like it was just reflecting the light of the lantern. It was hard to tell.
Which was the Lord of Light. Yeah. I mean, the way the light spiked up from that lantern, it was the Lord of Light's light. So I think that that kind of would make sense, too.
All I saw was boobies.
That is what you said last night. Boobies.
Multiple viewings. We get there eventually.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great scene, though. And like I said, I had been waiting since the beginning of the season for this scene to happen. And when she and Stannis, you know, hooked up on the table, while I was watching that with Tech, I said, oh, damn it, he's going to make her a shadow baby.
Ooh, it's my shadow baby daddy.
I was like, come here, honey. Help me make a shadow baby. And I was like, having so much fun with that. And of course I couldn't say anything.
One of my favorite blog post comments that I saw anywhere reading about this episode was one person had said, I don't think this was the kind of son that Stannis thought he was getting.
Oh yeah.
And then someone replied saying, poor Stannis, you can't play catch with a shadow.
Aww, that was a great episode, right?
Yeah.
Well, I expected with the smoke monster that they were gonna walk out and see the crash plane on the shore
and a polar bear
and look for Jack and Hugo and a polar bear. Yeah. But,
Introduce a new character, Sir Locke.
We didn't hear the ching 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 ching.
So. Did anybody else have any comments for the last scene? I think we pretty much covered it, but
I thought it looked awesome, and for being the first really obvious example of sorcery because dragons existing, whites and or white walkers existing is one thing. And then, of course, we saw earlier she survived poisoned wine. But this is the first time where we say, okay, yeah, magic's happening.
Yeah,
this is
Shadow Baby equals magic.
But it's still natural,
because she had to give birth.
Stannis planted a seed. It came out of her vagina. It wasn't like a wand or magic mithril or...
yeah. But...
I agree. I mean...
Yeah.
It's not how the birds and the bees usually work.
God, I hope not.
Well, neither was Danny's winged scaled in the death tent. That was pretty magical.
True.
Wrap it up or you'll end up having shadow babies, okay?
Right. Wrap that weasel.
Safe sex, okay? Yeah. Be careful when you're dallying with priestesses of the Lord of Light. Don't want to make any shadow babies.
So, overall ratings for everybody. We didn't do the what everybody thought, but I sort of feel everybody enjoyed the episode.
I did, except for the scene right at Karth with Danny. I don't like the way they changed that. I felt it made Danny look weaker than I wanted her to.
Okay. Hmm.
But otherwise, I like
score.
Christiana? I'm going to say 7 out of 10 of the tickler's questions answered.
Ooh, very good.
Ooh.
Nutty?
8 out of 10 shadow babies.
Shadow babies. Viv?
I just really, really liked it.
Keep the streak alive, baby.
Yeah,
I don't,
baby.
I got nothing. I liked it. I don't know, a bunch of dragons or some shit.
You yeah. could do so, however many out of the 13.
I two talked. 2 out of the 13. That makes it sound bad. 0's the higher number. 0's the best.
You're reversing the
I'm
scale.
I'm flipping so the good. Script. I'm using the 13, but I'm using 2 because 2 talked. So okay. I give it
2 out of 13.
Sigler Shining Pate.
I'm a Shining Pate.
Chooch, your rating?
3 out of 4 knuckle bones.
There you go. And I really liked the episode. I agree with Christiana about the Karth scene, sort of, but I just didn't like Danny's, just how she was talking and reacting to everything. But I still give it 9 out of 10 purple assed whores.
Assed whores. Oh. See, that just hurts to hear it.
That was for you, Viv.
Oh, thanks. Asshole.
So, Viv.
Yes.
We had a couple contests last couple yes. weeks.
Yeah.
Just real quick, before you guys get into that, I'm going to have to duck out early if that's okay.
Okay.
But I just want to say goodnight to everyone. And, you know, I figure you guys can do the contests and everything without me. So, all right.
Bye, Nutty.
So, for episode 3. The count that I was given was 8 deaths and 2 Hodors, and Chooch won that one with 6-0. He was the closest without going over.
Woo-hoo!
That's the cast. And then for the listeners, your favorite, Fantastic Pat, one of the listeners, we had 5 other people vote. We've got some feedback that we'll mention later, but I am going to read one of these.
Of course.
Daniel Canton said, "Greetings from Argentina."
Ooh.
Ooh.
And I just felt like reading that one.
Nice.
So that was episode 3. So Pat won for the listener and Chooch won for the cast. And then for this episode, episode 4, the contest was for the number of times the word dragon is said and the number of deaths. Chooch counted 9 dragons. Is that what you had, PG?
There were 10 dragons in the.
Dragons. Okay. Does that sound right, Chooch? Did you recount the second time?
I did not recount the second time.
Are you willing to concede the 10?
Absolutely.
Okay. I didn't know if we were going to have a throwdown somehow. I was really excited of what that might mean.
Yeah, he's the arbiter.
He's the arbiter. Okay. So, of the cast, PG won half of the question and I won the other half. So I had 9 dragons, which was the closest without going over, but PG had 6, and then he had 18 when it came to deaths, which was the highest for the cast since we decided it was thousands, and so he won the second half of the question.
I think that in 14 episodes, this is the first time I've actually won even half of a contest, so...
Well, if I hadn't voted 9 dragons, then you would have won both sides. Sucker, eat it. And then the listeners, Pat is again the winner.
Very good.
Wow.
6 out of 6.
So what we have decided for those listening, we are going to have a season-long contest. Whoever gets the most wins, including, you know, the ones that we did the first... I guess we didn't do one for episode 1. We just did them for the last 3, right? Or did we do one for episode 1?
Those baby cakes.
I think, yeah. So we have, you know, basically 2 contests for each week. The person that has the most will win a special prize, which we will announce officially later. And then we'll also do something for those that individually win, something small. But we will have multiple winners. For our contests in that way. And we also will be doing a feedback episode. We will record that a week from when you are... If you get this then, actually. I have a Westerosi time lapse because this episode probably won't come out till Friday. And then So we need to figure out when we're going to do a feedback. So when you hear this, sometime in the few days after you hear this, we're going to be doing a feedback episode because we have had a lot of feedback. We've had several phone calls, especially from our friend Nobilis, and we will be doing just a feedback episode. So if you want to call in or send emails after you hear this, whenever this comes out, then they will be included in that feedback episode. And will be a separate episode from episode 5, which will be the next one.
PG.
Yes, ma'am.
Are they free to comment on the podcast and the HBO show itself?
Absolutely.
And the book?
Well, we don't do spoilers, so if they do any sort of spoilers from the book, we reserve the right to edit or not include or do something in the future.
I wanted to hear what Christiana was going to say. I think it was probably more interesting than what you were saying.
All I was going to say is,
wow.
Sorry.
Spoilers, we will be very put out.
Exactly.
But editing really probably makes more sense. Because being put out doesn't actually really accomplish anything.
No.
So I guess that's it for tonight. I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. And I know I did. And Viv got to, bust on me, so, she's happy. Snap! And we will talk to you next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.
He's out of town and I have to talk to him before he can go to bed. So, all right. Good night.
Night.
Oh, how do I quit this? Here we go. Hang on.
Yeah, I'm keeping that.
I see Natty and Christiana.
And this weird vampire cowboy.
Who doesn't want a vampire cowboy? I mean, come on.
Yeehaw.
Motherfucker! Probably could have found bloopers. However, to Patrick, PG, they don't merit blooper status.
So, should I just say boobs, 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 boobs?
Boobity boob.
Boobity boob. Boob.
I like the idea that blooper status is like something to aspire to.
Bippity boppity boo. I consider spanking?
What do you consider? Where is the line that you draw that Joffrey went too far? At what point was it that you went, oh, no, that's not deserved? That's more than spanking.
Oh, when he went for the scepter, of course.